Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Maureen Callahan. She's out with her new book, American Predator, The Hunt for the Most Meticulous Serial Killer of the 21st Century. Maureen is an investigative journalist, columnist, commentator, all kinds of stuff. You can read her in the New York Post from time to time. Recently, she was doing a battle of words with Howard Stern as I was following her columns. But we're talking about this book, American Predator. The book tells the story of a serial killer who you describe as a new kind of monster. And his name is Israel. It's either Keyes or Keyes. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. But what do you mean
Keyes.
By Keyes? All right. What do you mean by new?
When Israel Keyes was caught by law enforcement, and he was initially arrested in connection with the disappearance of a teenage girl, and quickly the FBI realized he had done this before, and they were interrogating him in Anchorage, Alaska, which is where he was from, and they had, of course, wired in the FBI's top criminal profilers who were listening in from Quantico, and very quickly, these profilers said to the case agents, "We don't know what to tell you. We've never seen a serial killer like this before. He was completely unprecedented in his modus operandi, his victim profile, which was no victim profile whatsoever. Most serial killers have a type. Most serial killers operate close to home. This guy traveled all over the United States, going dark, as he called it, cell phone off, battery out, using cash only, taking people from one location, moving them to another, and by location, I mean states, taking from one state, dumping them in another state, moving on very, very quickly, leaving behind no DNA of any kind. He was, as I call him in the book, a cluster bomb, a terrifying cluster bomb."
Well, you mentioned the abduction and murder in Alaska. It was Samantha Koenig, and the way that you described it in the book is that it was a really a close to a home killing for him. Usually he was traveling. This one he happened to commit in Alaska, and that's what ended up being his downfall. But what was it about the Samantha Koenig abduction and murder that made him operate outside of his normal pattern of traveling to places?
The one thing he would admit in regards to that, and it was hard for him because for criminals of this extremity, the most important thing to them is control. They need to be in control of everything and everyone at all times. And he admitted that he had been losing control. He had normally been able to go longer periods of time between taking someone, and he could rely on other things to sort of stave off these incredibly dark urges. But towards the end of his spree, which went on for at least two decades, he couldn't control himself anymore. And he at first said, "Oh, Samantha, that was a lone incident. I never operated in my own backyard." And then these incredibly astute, patient, smart investigators began to get more out of him, that he, in fact, had stalked people in Alaska. He had staked out parks. He described to them one night at a lover's lane, a well-known lover's lane, which is located. One of the investigators took me there at night so I could really see what it was like. And it was literally like standing on the edge of the earth and you could just drop off. It was that pitch black. And he biked out there and had a rifle, and he positioned himself behind an outhouse, and he had his sights on this couple in a car, and he was going to shoot them. He had a silencer. He said no one would have heard or felt a thing. And then a cop car drives up, which surprised him because he didn't think a cop car was going to come just for some kids in a lover's lane. The cop got out of the car. Now he's planning he's going to shoot all three of them. And then the cop radioed for backup. And it was only then when he thought, okay, this might be a little too complicated, I'm going to go. But he was that brazen and that sure of his abilities to do this wherever and whenever he wanted and get away with it.
it seems like his idea of traveling, he would travel to one area, fly to maybe Chicago, then drive a car to someplace else a few states away, and hide these kill kits. Can you kind of explain the process by which it's, at least to the extent we know, how he did this?
Yeah, of course. So this was what made his modus operandi so terrifying to the FBI. He would buy a plane ticket, often using his girlfriend's credit card, and fly into a major city. In the minute he stepped on a plane, he's got his cell phone off and his battery out. And from that moment on, he's using only cash. He is going to land at this major hub, and then he's going to rent a car. And he's going to go dig up one of untold number of kill kits that he has buried all over the United States. They still remain buried all over the United States. Nobody knows where they are. Their locations were known only to him, and he never wrote down where they were. Those kill kits were 5-gallon Home Depot buckets, which he filled with guns, ammo, rope, cash from bank robberies. He was a bank robber as well. And Drano, which he told them accelerated human decomposition. He would then go on the hunt, find a person or persons. He also liked to take people in pairs. You could be a couple, it could be mother-daughter, father-son, didn't matter. Could be broad daylight, could be middle of the night. He would take them, rape them, kill them, and then move the bodies to another location, preferably another state, and then dispose of their remains so expertly that he left no trace or DNA behind. Then get in his car and put hundreds, if not thousands, of miles between him and that crime scene as quickly as possible. And so there was no way to ever connect him, really, to any of the disappearances that he could be responsible for. In the book, I explore some cold cases and some missing persons that law enforcement has reason to believe could be related to him. And I definitely have reason to believe could be related to him. So it's not impossible. But in the moment when the FBI was interviewing him, they were so unprepared to deal with someone of his magnitude.
I'm chatting with Maureen Callahan about her new book, American Predator, The Hunt for the Most Meticulous Serial Killer of the 21st Century. Maureen, one of the things you also explore in the book is this whole idea of questioning a suspect, and not just a suspect, but a suspect like Israel Keyes, and the fighting that went on between the different jurisdictions of law enforcement, and what surprised me is the U.S. attorney in Alaska who wanted to get in on this interrogation. How specific of a science is this type of interrogation that a U.S. attorney probably shouldn't be doing it?
This was one of the things when I realized it had gone on, I couldn't believe it. You know, everyone who was involved in this case, the special agents in particular, they are great individuals, and they are great at their jobs. And interrogation is as much an art as it is a science. And these are professionals who undergo, they're as experienced as they are. I mean, Jeff Bell has been in law enforcement for 20 years. They undergo training constantly. They are constantly refreshing their skills. And so when they caught the Keyes case, they all also recognized that it was, quote unquote, a once in a lifetime case, that this was special, and that they were, it may sound weird to a layperson, but they were very lucky to catch it. And that went for the federal prosecutor in this case, who very quickly realized this was a case that could make someone a star. This is a case that could elevate someone's profile nationally. And he came in and he said to the FBI agents, this is my case now. This is my interrogation now. And because Anchorage is sort of a very insular community, things sort of were allowed to progress in a way that quickly grew out of control. And the federal prosecutor deputized himself to lead not just all of the interrogations with Keyes, but crucially, the first one. And the first one was the most important, because when the FBI arrested Keyes in connection with the disappearance of this teenage girl who had gone missing up there, Samantha Koenig, they had virtually no evidence connecting him to it. So if he had stuck to his story, he could have walked. They had to figure out how to leverage a lack of evidence into a strength. And that was a mental exercise that they took. I mean, they deliberated on how to do it, who was going to talk, what they were going to say, what they weren't going to say, what they were going to bring into the room, what they weren't going to bring into the room. Some investigators like to use a lot of props and come in with a ton of boxes and say, this is everything we've got. Those boxes could be empty. These interrogators didn't like to do that, and yet they found themselves hamstrung by a federal prosecutor who had only ever worked white-collar crimes and who, as is detailed in the book, during that first interrogation came very close to blowing it, came very, very close to letting Keyes know they had virtually nothing on him.
One thing I noticed, I've read a lot of true crime books over the years, and all of them have pictures of victims, the players, the scenes. You don't have any of that in here. There's just one little tiny picture of Keyes' eyes on the front cover. I've later seen pictures in your columns that have run excerpts of it in the New York Post, but the descriptions you have in the book are so accurate that when I saw the real pictures, it matched kind of how I thought about it. But why'd you choose to not use pictures in the book to tell part of this story?
You know, I just wanted the reader to be completely immersed in it. I wanted the reader to feel the same sense of discovery that the investigators feel as they learn things. That's the way the story is told. It's really through the investigators' eyes. So every time they have an epiphany or they come to a horrible realization, the reader is right there with them. Anyone who's curious can certainly find those images online. I really just wanted to keep the reader in that world with these really incredible agents.
All right, the book is amazing. It's American Predator, The Hunt for the Most Meticulous Serial Killer of the 21st Century by Maureen Callahan. It's available now. Pick it up. It will keep you up at night, not only keeping you interested, but it's a scary book, too. Maureen, great book here. Thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you so much, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta...